This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to iFanboys Talksplode, and I am Josh Flanagan. Talksplode is a show where we sit down and we chat with some of the greatest creators in comics today. Today, I am talking with Eric Canetti, who's currently working on End League from Dark Horse with writer Rick Remender, and most recently did Iron Man Enter the Mandarin with Joe Casey from Marvel Comics. Hey, this is Josh. We're here with Eric Canetti. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Josh. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem at all. Now, let me get this correct. You grew up in the Philippines?
I did. Yeah. A good chunk of my childhood in the Philippines. Didn't get here until I was about fourth grade.
How aware of you were, like, of American comics and things like that when you were growing up there?
You know what? It was just at the peripheral. There was nothing really too huge for me. I mean, my first exposure to it was probably like, I can't even remember which issue of Secret Wars that I got as a trade for my lunch money. But thereafter, I started seeing it kind of filter in. It doesn't have as big of a presence there as it probably does now. So yeah, it was a couple of comic books here and there, but nothing consistent.
So did you start reading comics as a kid then?
Yeah, but more Filipino comics, you know, stuff that was being published locally. Yeah, nothing American. Oh. I think it's probably because it was probably something to do with the finances of it all, you know?
Right.
I can't recall what the cover price back then was, but for a kid like me, I probably couldn't afford it, so.
So was that, did you like fall in love with comics at that point? I mean, was that something that you wanted to do or?
No. My mother was here trying to hash out a life for herself, so she had left me with my aunt temporarily until she could actually afford to have me come to the United States with her. But with as many flags as they possibly could, they were trying to wave me off of doing any kind of illustration because they didn't think that would be a viable future for a guy. So for a while, they were just telling me to be a doctor, telling me to get into the medical field of some sort. And when that didn't work, they realized how much I loved drawing. They were telling me to get into the medical field, but doing medical illustration. So, yeah, no, comics was the farthest thing from my radar then.
Now you sort of started in animation rather than that. What field were you drawn to initially, I guess?
It was definitely comics. It was definitely comics. It was my eighth grade, maybe, I think it was, ninth grade, and Jim Lee had just come onto the scene. He was doing, I can't recall, it had to have been Uncanny, and I just fell in love with it, and I thought, yeah, this is the way to go. So eighth grade, all throughout beginning part of high school, late into high school, that's what I wanted to do. I just couldn't hack it style-wise. There was you've heard about this, where everybody was, the only people that were getting hired sort of had to represent a house style depending on which studio they were going for. Mm-hmm. So I didn't like any of that stuff, or either that or I just couldn't draw that well. So animation was a nice way for me to mimic somebody else's style, and it was approachable for me. So I broke into animation first and comics later.
It's really interesting because it seems like it would be harder to break into animation. I guess not at that time, though.
No, actually, if you think about it, the comic book boom was full-blown in 93, was it 93, 94?
Yeah, something like
that. Yeah, everybody was trying to break in back then, and yeah, the competition was really heated because that's when everybody was making money hand over fist once you broke in, you know?
Did you make your own comics before that, or were you just doing sample pages?
It was all just sample pages. I didn't have the right mindset back then to make my own comics. You know, I wasn't that creative. All I wanted to draw was somebody else's property. These days, I wish I could go back and slap myself aside the head and say, hey, man, just draw your own stuff until you actually get your big break. But back then, all I wanted to do was everybody else's property.
All right. Now the first thing that you got noticed on was Aeon Flux. Is mm-hmm. that right? I mean, was that the first big thing that you'd worked on?
Yeah, I mean, that was coming home from a San Diego where I was showing my portfolio around, absolutely dejected. I didn't get any kind of interest from anybody that I had shown my work for. And then I think about 2 weeks, maybe, I can't recall how soon, Peter Chung, who created Aeon Flux, gave me a call. And coming back from San Diego, I really thought I was going to have to go in and get a regular 9-to-5 kind of job. Peter gives me a call, and within a couple of weeks, or was it even as long as a month, I was living up in San Francisco working on that show.
Now, what did you do for that show? Because you had no experience in the world of animation. I guess you'd just been doing sample pages?
No. I mean, I had ghosted for a guy for a little bit. So I was doing background designs for, remember the old X-Men cartoon that was based on Jim Lee stuff? I ghosted on that stuff, doing background designs and several other shows that were coming down the pipeline. So I had a little bit of it, but as far as in-house, being an actual animation studio, it was I was very green. When I got hired to do that, when Peter brought me up north, I was a background designer. And then eventually, because of the nature of production, Peter would just kind of shift me around to different departments that needed help. So it was at props, and then next thing you know, it was storyboarding and so on. So
it's funny because now when I think about Aeon Flux, the movie notwithstanding, but like it's almost a style. It was like the first American show of that kind, and now, you know, people use that as a reference. Like, oh, it's like Aeon Flux. Like it's a style. Did you guys? I mean, did you know that when you were working on it? How do you think about it now? Like in retrospect.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the stuff that was getting laughed at San Diego because I was implementing that style using comic book characters, and that people just weren't having that. You know, they couldn't stand somebody who was, I don't know, 10 heads, 12 heads high, that was skinny as a rail and wearing Superman's outfit. That was just not accepted. So I was very aware, and I really, really liked it. Unfortunately, it just wasn't applicable back then. Nowadays, I think people are a lot more open to have their characters drawn in that way, just so it's that much more distinct than anything else that's out on the shelves, you know?
It's like something happened in the past, I don't know, not even 10 years, but at some point, like, you were able to have all these different styles. Were you paying attention when that sort of changed and you thought, well, I can get back into comics then? I'm trying to think about the people, like, it feels like Mike Waringo came in and all of a sudden was like, oh, you can make it sort of cartoony instead of just the Jim Lee style or something like that.
Sure. You know, I don't know when the comic public consciousness, I genuinely believe it has less to do with the people who are buying comic books than the people who are hiring these guys to draw their comic books, you know. I don't know when the editors, I guess, that would be the right people to be talking about right now. I don't know when the editors kind of snapped out of, oh, let's just make it look like what's hot right now, and let's just put the person who's on, you know, let's put the person on the book who's good. Mm-hmm. So I don't know when it started to become less about a pre-established style and more about, wow, this feels and looks really good. It's really applicable to the title and the kind of stories that we want to tell. And then from there, I guess the diversity just started to slowly seep in, you know, and now it's rampant. I'm glad to see so many different styles out there.
Yeah, I think that's one of the coolest things about right now, because one book doesn't look anything like the next, you know.
Sure.
And they can both sell.
Sure, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. As long as it fits for the story, as long as it helps, you know, it contributes to the overall story that's being told, then yeah, man. Style is, I mean, these days, style is such a secondary thing. You know, I focus more on how well that story is being told rather than how ultimately pretty something is, you know.
Now you worked in a lot of animation for a while. Was there a point where you were like, well, I'll be done with comics, or were you sort of coming in and going, or?
You know, my first love is comics, so I don't know, even if I tried, I mean, even if I actually said it out loud that I'm done with comics, I'll never go back, and it's been terrible to me, and blah, 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 I don't think any of that was true. I love drawing comic books. I love panel-to-panel storytelling. So there was no point in time when I said, I'm done with comics. It's just that animation lent itself to be a little bit more regular.
Yeah.
a lot more approachable because I have a whole lot of friends, a lot more approachable by way of employment because I have a whole lot of friends who are directors and producers for shows. So whenever they need help, they're kind enough to give me a call. So that makes it a whole lot easier. And then when a project comes up, like let's use Iron Man, for example, right? When Iron Man came across my radar, I had to jump on that because it was such a great opportunity. I hadn't worked with Joe in forever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, animation is there. It's challenging, but the reason why I go back to it is out of convenience. You know, and that's not talking down to it. It's just a whole lot easier for me to approach being in California, you know.
Yeah, sure. Well, and the way that Rick Remender put it when we talked to him was that for the N League, you quit what you were doing there, and you're like you're devoting yourself to doing comics for a time now.
Yeah, only because the story really deserves it, and I wanted to see if I could actually do comic books full time.
Right.
And Rick is a great storyteller, and the stuff that he's trying to get across with N League deserves 100% attention. They are also trying to. They have shifted it to a monthly schedule, so there was just no way. There's no getting around. Mm-hmm. Committing myself to that 100% and then making animation my secondary form of income. So, and I'm having a blast doing it. And yeah, the difference between now and then being I couldn't do a monthly book because of the fact that I was just so detail oriented. These days, it's just a matter of getting the point across. Whatever Rick has on script, if I get that across on the panel, then I've done my job. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So you went from a guy who couldn't do a monthly book to you. Did you shift your style so that you could? I guess.
Yeah, it's a matter of perspective. It's all about. I don't know how to. The best way that I can explain it is I got so caught up about all the little nooks and crannies of a panel or a set of panels or a set of pages that I forgot the point of it all, which is, you know, I'm just trying to move the story along. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving you the most basic images that I can in order to help perpetuate that. You know, Rick says something in text and in dialogue, I'm supposed to help that along. And if I can put a little bit of something in there, that'll help the story that much more. Then yeah, everything else I've kind of pared down to. Oh, that's just not important. That's just crap. That's just BS. Nobody's paying attention to that little corner. You know, back then I used to get obsessed about that little corner.
The maturity of an artist is that. Do you think that came from your experience in working in animation or comics or just time?
Yeah, it's animation. Animation, most specifically storyboards. I had a great director named Sam Liu. Who I worked with on the Batman, the new Batman show. Mm-hmm. And he was the guy that was just basically telling me, you know, focus on what needs to be told as clearly and as concisely as possible because you only have X amount of minutes to do it. There's no room for fluff, you know. Mm-hmm. And in comic books, it's that much more succinct because of the fact you only have 22 pages to get your point across. You don't have 17 minutes of moving pictures. You have 22 pages of still images, and you're supposed to communicate whatever idea that Rick or Joe or the writer has come up with in as precise as possible. So, and then after that, after the Batman training, that skill got even more honed when I moved on to Justice League Unlimited, and Bruce Timm was there, and Bruce's filtering system was so very precise about how to tell a story concisely, precisely. Mm-hmm. And I think now I carry that over to my panel-to-panel work. And you can see it. You know, you can see some of the Bruce Timmish influences in there. So,
well, let's see. I'll ask you about some of the animation stuff because it's interesting. Now, you did storyboard work and character design?
I did, yeah. Depending on which show it is. Like, for instance, I started off doing on the design end of everything, right? And then I left to go do comics for Wildstorm for a little bit. And then when I tried to come back into animation, all those design positions were filled because those are very coveted positions. You know, it's, Anyway, so those are coveted positions. And the only thing that was available to me were storyboarding. I'd never done storyboarding before, but luckily I was very fortunate enough to know one of the guys who was running the show, a fellow by the name of Jay Oliva, who taught me how to the little ins and outs, the little nooks and crannies, the smart way of storyboarding. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I got back into animation and started doing more storyboarding. And then from there, it just rolled into one job to the next.
And you did stuff like, you said Justice League Unlimited, The Batman, Legion of Superheroes. I mean, that seems like it's got to be so close to just doing actual comics and you're getting to work on those characters. I mean, it was the whole time you're thinking, man, I want to be doing these comics or...
Well, actually, you know, it's one of those things where when I was doing those superhero-related shows, mm-hmm. in the back of my mind, I had something that was telling me I can't do comics. Something had blocked me out from doing that because I had left comics in order to come back into animation because it had put me in such a bad, terrible, terrible, messed up financial spot that I said, I just can't do this. This is not made for me. This is made for young kids who are still living with their parents, you know what I mean? who don't have the financial responsibilities that I have, blah, 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 blah. So I kind of blocked it out in my mind that I couldn't do it. And then just something that just clicked, and I think it's all of these little 90-minute things that I was doing, these 90-minute exercises that I was doing on my blog, that really keyed me into, wait a second, if I can do these in 90 minutes, how many steps away am I from actually doing a finished page? And that is what planted the seed in my mind to try to make a comeback into comeback from animation into comics again. And then luckily Joe Casey rolled around with the Iron Man project and said, let's do this.
Well, can you explain what the 90-minute exercises are? Because I put it on your blog and I think I saw them, but...
Oh, yeah, sure. I got to a point in animation where, you know, all I was trying to do was get the next paycheck. You know what I mean? It started to become less about the property that I was working on, which is in the beginning was super fun and exciting, and I was learning. And it's just started to become about, okay, what new show am I going to be on because I got bills to pay the next month, you know? And once you go into work with that kind of mentality, it is the last thing that you want to do is work on that gig. So in the morning when I'd get into work, all I would do for the first hour and a half until lunch rolled around was draw anything and everything that came to my mind. Most of the time, it was dictated by whatever movie that I put on into my portable DVD player. Mm-hmm. So that's about 90 minutes long, you know, a movie length, 90 minutes long. And I gave myself that much time to come up with an image, something that had a small little visual narrative going to it. And at the end of the 90 minutes, I put down my pen and say, okay, what did I come up with? Sometimes it's crap. Most of the time, it was crap. But then once in a while, I get something that was pretty cool, and that's the stuff that ended up in my blog the first few months that I started posting. These days are a little bit more complicated, and it's only because I've learned, again, even more so, to pare down the stuff that's important and what's not, blah, blah, blah. It's hardly ever detail-oriented anymore, although I still get caught up in that sometimes.
It's funny. It sounds like there's the writer's exercise about doing, like, morning pages where, you know, every day, hell or high water, you write 3 pages. It doesn't matter what
you're
writing.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a whole school of writing that says, you know, whether it's morning or at night or whatever, you know, just get 3 pages of out. It doesn't matter what it's about or what it is. And then, you know, supposedly after you pass 1,000,000 words, you know, then you'll have gotten all the bad words out of your system and then be good at it. But
yeah, you know, I heard something like that. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Artistic equivalent of the same thing.
Yep, absolutely.
So Joe came to you with Iron Man sort of out of the blue, I guess. Did you work with him at Wildstorm? Is that how that worked?
Yeah, I worked with Joe on Mr. Majestic, I think it was, after Ed McGuinness left. I can't recall, you have to forgive me, but Mr. Majestic, but definitely Ladytron. Joe and I had this one shot out of Wildstorm. And to be honest with you, I did such a poor job of coming in on time on Ladytron. I really thought I burned any and all bridges with Joe because I put him in such a bad spot, you know. I was so late on that book, and it was just so... I just was not very smart about my time. It got to the point where I think they had to have somebody come and help me out in the last few pages. And I thought, that's it. I'm never going to hear from Joe Casey again. And as a matter of fact, I'm never going to hear from a paying comic book company again. So, and that was that. But, you know, it was surprising. Joe came back and said, hey, listen, whatever happened between us before, that's done. Let's go do Iron Man. Do you want to do this Iron Man thing with me? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And from there, that was the fuel to my personal fire to go, okay, well, I'm getting a second chance with this guy. I better knock his book out of the park.
That's really cool. And what's interesting is, you know, that movie that came out at the same time, you know, roughly as the movie.
Yeah.
And you don't have to say this, but I can say, I think a lot of the other Iron Man books that were around at the time, you know, like the main Iron Man book, it wasn't terribly exciting. Whereas when Enter the Mandarin was coming out, I'm like, this is the best Iron Man book coming out at the time.
Oh, and man. That
I felt like you were putting your all into it. I mean, was like the shadow of the movie there while you guys were working on it, or...
You know, and I've told this a couple of times to people who have asked me about it, and I had no idea that the Iron Man movie was on its way. Absolutely, absolutely no idea. And people don't want to believe me because they had got such a huge media push beforehand, but I never really That never really came across my radar. Mm-hmm. Joe thought of it, though, because Joe is a tactician that yes. way. He knew something was coming around the corner, and he told me this afterwards. Like, of course I knew. Mm-hmm. I planned it all, planned out. You know, he was you know, kind of manipulating things so that things worked out, so we'd dovetail into the popularity and the media for that movie. But for me, I didn't get a hint of it until that San Diego Comic-Con, where they announced, or actually when they had the panel for it, you know, and at that point my mentality was, oh shit, you know, now what, you know, because, you know, my editor, Stephen Wacker, brilliant guy, extremely patient and just stood out of my way, just stayed out of my way the entire time. And, but when they announced the movie that it was going to be out by a certain time, suddenly there was a match lit. You know what I mean? The fuse was lit. And yeah, that this book needed to come out in trade paperback form by the time that movie hit the movie screen. So suddenly it stopped becoming about, oh yeah, Eric, take your time and just make sure those pages look pretty. And then to the point where it's like, hurry the fuck up, we need this damn book, you know? But yeah, I had no idea. I had no idea that the movie was coming out. But thank you for the compliment about it being.
It was a really good book, and I think part of the thing that actually bugs me is that I don't think enough people noticed that book because it wasn't sort of the main title.
But sure.
I feel like you've gotten a lot of attention because of it, maybe in the industry rather than the fan base, I guess.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I'm hoping.
Would
I'm
you?
Hoping
that I did. Did that feel like a like? I mean, I don't want to put it this way, but did it feel like a comeback of sorts? I mean, because I feel like you did a really good job on that. Now you're doing this other stuff, and you've got some buzz behind you, I guess.
Well, by definition, I guess it could be considered a comeback. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'll take that. You know, yeah, I'll take that. It's a good, thing to put in the face of people. And so, what have you done since you came back from animation? Iron Man's a great book. Mm-hmm. Iron Man's a great book, but I couldn't have done that without Joe. Joe put the words in front of me, and I just drew it. So.
Now, do you look at that work and you see like a big leap from the work that you'd done before, which you said was somewhat lacking in some of the things that it had to be?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. Just the narrative these days. I was too in love with tricks back in the day. I was just too in love with like, ooh, how cool would it be if I broke this panel, or how cool would it be if I suddenly have this guy jumping from one side of the world, one side of the scene to the other side, and mm-hmm. these kooky camera angles. And it was less about, let's just have the reader understand what I'm trying to say, you know?
Yeah, well, you were not the only artist to come about in the 90s who had to shake those out of his system, I don't think.
There you go. Well, I mean, it's easy enough to say I was just as guilty as everybody else, but looking back now, it's almost like, oh, that's too bad, you know, because there's a lot of great titles that I'd worked on, in my opinion. There were a lot of great properties that I managed to be able to get on, and I did it such a great disservice by not paying attention to how to tell a story rather than all the flashy tricks, you know? Mm-hmm.
So yeah. how did N-League come up then? Because, you know, it's not a huge book, but for Dark Horse it was kind of a big deal. Had you been reading it before? Had you been aware of it?
No, actually, and it's embarrassing to say this, but I keep myself out of the comic book loop. Okay. So when Rick Remender emailed me, I had to literally ask who he was and what that book was, you know. So, and he was very patient. He laughed it off, and he showed me samples of the stuff that Matt Broom had done. And I was, you know, I looked at the book and I thought to myself, well, I really can't do this better than what Matt Broom is doing. Mm-hmm. And for me to step in here and say, well, you know what, it was such a huge stylistic visual departure from the stuff that I was doing, it would have just been alienating to the fans that Rick had already, which would do the title, the series, a great disservice. You know, I don't want to lose. I don't want anybody to lose their readership because I came on board. So I aired those concerns with Rick, and I told him, listen, man, you're going to lose a whole lot of people because I don't draw like Matt Broom. Some of this stuff, design-wise, I would change. And, you know, and Rick was completely open to that. God bless him. He was like, let's take the risk. Let's push it in a direction where you're comfortable with it and I can tell the kind of stories based on the artwork that you're producing. And yeah, it's been an enjoyable experience, a good, fulfilling experience.
Well, I guess that's sort of my question. My next question was, when you approach it, I mean, how much of it did you say, like, I can't work in this style, I can't do this thing? You know, how much of it did you change to do it your way? I mean, I suppose, did you redesign anything or just the feel?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a couple of things, and it's not a strike against Matt Broom at all. I mean, the stuff that Matt's designing is great for Matt, you know. But when I approach things, I guess it's the animation bit inside of me where I need to be able to tell a story using the characters that read immediately. You know, and what I mean by that is when you look at Batman, mm-hmm. you know it's Batman right away. Right away. Silhouette-wise, he's such a strong, dominant design that you can read him if he was small on the panel or if he was kicking you right in the face in a huge splash panel, you know? And
for 70 years.
Exactly, exactly. He's been that relevant, and I think that was my biggest design concern when it came to the End League, which is that reapproaching some of those characters and have them stand out as a good, iconic, silhouetted image. You know, if you can tell who character A is from character B and from character B to character C, then I've done my job. You know, it makes my job a whole lot easier to convince you that person in the far background is character B, you know? So that was my thing. I threw that out to Rick. I said, Rick, do you mind if I redesign some of these guys? Rick asked me, please don't get too crazy with them. And I voiced my concern, the stuff that I just told you right now. Mm-hmm. And Rick is totally on board because Rick comes from an animation background. Right. He knew exactly what I was talking about. So it made it that much easier.
That's cool. Is there a favorite sequence? Because I loved the first sequence from issue, I think it was 5, the first one you did mm-hmm. the full thing. The is it the Red Wolf? I want to say Red Skull, but I know that's not what it is.
Yeah.
The whole Nazi thing. That was fantastic.
Thanks, man.
I mean,
that was
a ton of fun. And like, I was reading this and kind of thinking, I really wish this was Red Skull because it's that good. But it's
it's weird because I had discussed that with Rick just really super quick. And the kind of stuff that Rick wants to do is the kind of stuff they'd never let him do. Sure. You know what I mean? I think. If there's any truth to this, I can understand why, but I think the reason why Rick would do this book is because it's everything that he's wanted to do with those characters, but not necessarily, but he never would get the green light to do, you know, and sure, yeah, it does harken to Red Skull, but, you know, they'd never let us do half of that stuff, you know, that's just so, that would just throw everything that they've, history that they have for Red Skull thus far, that would just throw everything out the window and have him be actually how I remember Red Skull to be, you know? So, yeah.
And how long are you going to be on that book?
I'm projected to be on it for, what issue am I on now?
Four, eight? Next one, I think. Okay.
Yeah, until 8, and I think they are currently trying to build up for 9 through 12, and I think I might be on that as well, but I can't be 100% sure.
Sure. Now, are things a little different now? Do you have other stuff that, you don't have any big announcements or anything you make, and that's fine, but, I mean, is there going to be other stuff that you're going to be working on in comics, or?
Comics-wise, nothing that I can talk about. There's always something in the works, but nothing ultra crazy, you know, and if by way of actual announcements are concerned, I let the publishers do that before I do it anywhere else, and it's only because I don't know. I have absolutely no idea as far as like comic book tactics, you know, as far as publishing tactics are concerned. I have no idea. Let them handle that. I'll just draw the comic book.
Does it seem different than sort of the first go around you had, you know, in the industry specifically?
I mean, you know, the only difference is my level of ignorance. Back then, I used to pay so much attention to everything. It was mm-hmm. I don't know how many books a month it was. It must have been at least 40 books a month, and paying attention to every title that's out there, you know, what I didn't buy, my friends would buy. Mm-hmm. And it was great. It kept me in the loop, but it really consumed me as far as, like, I don't know. I don't even know in what it consumed my time, first and foremost. And it kind of, I was too involved in it rather than just worrying about my end of it. You know what I mean? I was too involved in the hype of the comic books rather than worrying about the actual production of the comic book.
Yeah.
And I attribute that to youth. You know, you're in the comic book industry. You're working with so many cool people, and hype is just a natural thing that a person has a tendency to get caught up on. And nowadays, I just draw the book, you know. And at the end of the month, I see it published, and that's great, you know.
So, do you not read any books now?
Let me think. The last book that I read, which I'm having a ton of fun reading, is this book by is the Iron Man book by Matt Fraction. Is that right?
Okay. Yeah. Invincible Iron Man.
Okay. Yeah, that looks great.
Yeah.
That looks great. The story that he's trying to tell in that is amazing. I'm so happy to look through that book, and it feels good at the end of the 22 page. Although I have an issue, and I'm sure you've had these conversations with with people. I have an issue with single issues now. You know, I read it at the end of, well, it's 32 pages, but technically it's 22 pages worth of story. You know, I read these issues and I think, what the hell, man? You know, give me the entire movie. Don't have me come back every month and show me 20 minutes of a movie at a time.
Do you feel boxed in by that format now?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, Rick's stuff, I'll use Rick's stuff as an example because I have all 8 scripts sitting in, you know, I've had it on my email box for a while and I've gone over them. It just does such a, it's like a weird stutter step. You know what I'm getting at? It's such a weird kind of thing where every X amount of pages, there's an intermission. You as an audience, we've been, I guess, trained to get used to that. Every month there's going to be a new story, but it really takes me out of it. I have to recall exactly what happened the month before. And that's not a stretch by any means as far as my ability to actually do it, but there's this one great story that Rick is trying to tell, and it just, in my opinion, it does it such a great disservice by breaking it up into 4 issues.
It's funny because I think that there's been a split sort of creatively where there are still some guys, but they're getting to be more rare, who do really good single issues. For whatever reason, the book, it'll come out once a month and you read it and it's fine. But there's other things that are happening that just can't, like, for whatever reason, they're just, the storytelling is getting too complex, or there's just too much other stuff going on in our lives, you know, to follow that kind of thing. And it's Endley's actually one of those books where there was so much going on. There's so many characters and so many things that I can definitely see that with that book.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think just the way the books are formatted, I don't know. I have older issues back when I used to be an avid collector of comic books where the single issue was a good meal. You know, there was a beginning, middle, and end, and at the end of 22 pages, Green Lantern somehow saved the day, right? Mm-hmm. But nowadays, because of the fact that there are these extended storylines, you'd think to yourself the best thing to do is to release all of these storylines at the same time. And comic books as a format, we have this stigma where it must be a monthly, and I constantly have to ask myself, why is that? Why does it have to be a monthly? You know, who are we feeding into? What are we feeding into that these comic books have to be a monthly title? I mean, let's use the book that Fraction is writing. I mean, I would love to read that in one sitting. I would love to read that in one sitting because there's nothing that he's leaving at the end of every page that makes me go, oh, I wonder, you know, the big cliffhanger ending. You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
He doesn't mean to do that. But I feel that a lot of the, not just him, I'm talking about comic books in general, like the few that I picked up.
It's the marketplace. Yeah,
exactly. They almost feel like they have to have that cliffhanger ending at the end of every issue. You know what that's like in the overall storytelling scheme of things? That's like one giant gasp every time 10 minutes rolls around in a movie, let's say. Although it's not a movie, which that makes it somewhat unfair, but it's a gasp every 10 minutes. What is that? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I mean, there is a difference now that, now as opposed to 10 or even 5 years ago, the trade paperback market didn't exist at all.
Sure,
in the same way. So that, you know, while you don't have to get that Matt Fraction book right when it comes out, that's going to be a trade. You know, you'd wait 6 months in between issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Sounds to me like you have an original graphic novel in the future.
Yeah. There's one in the works and in the making. It's just, it's an extremely skewed opinion on my part, and I feel bad actually even airing it, but I figure why the hell not?
No, it makes sense, and I think that it's something that, I think in comics, comics can serve both masters in a way. And you know what's unfortunate is with the monthly comics, you know, the way that most of their fan base works, in the market and comic shops, is that they have to have those monthly sales to justify the later one, because you know people are more likely to try $3 on a book than $18 on a book, I guess.
Well, let me ask, are you a monthly guy? Do you like monthly books?
Out of necessity.
I
do a podcast. We talk about the books of the week every week. I think that if it wasn't for that, I have let them pile up and read them all at once. I have lots of trades, but I mean, I love the fact that I have trades now.
Sure, sure. Oh, by the way, that's a great website that you guys have, man. I just got through, before you and I got on the phone now, earlier this morning, I just went through it again. I thought, what a great service you guys are providing.
Thank you.
You know, if I had this kind of access back in the day, I would be a little bit more discerning about the books that I paid off. I mean, yeah, sure. $1.25 back in the day when I was a hardcore collector is not a ton, but to a kid who wasn't making any kind of money, $1.25 is huge. And I wish there were a couple of books that I didn't buy. Based on your website, just based on that the pull list feature that you guys have, that's amazing. That's great.
That's my favorite part. I use it.
Like, yeah, I would be all over that as a kid. Again, if I was still an avid collector, I would be all over that. What a great website. You guys do a bang-up job week in, week out.
Thanks, man. See, now I'm off. No one ever talks to us. So are there any books, I guess, going forward, the characters or things you'd really love to get your hands on in the future? Like, do you have a burning Captain America story or something like that? Or do you feel like doing your own thing, or...?
As far as the mainstream stuff is concerned, no, it's really less about that and more about the individuals working on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I didn't know Rick before I got on the End League, but after working with him, if he ever had a Captain America in him, like a Captain America story that he wanted to tell, I'd be all over that.
Yeah,
I would be all over that. If Joe ever had whatever Joe was on whatever's on Joe's radar, and he thinks that I'm the right guy for the project, yeah, stop the world. I'll draw it for Joe.
Mm-hmm.
It really has a lot to do with the people that I work with, because for me, it starts to become about hype. Like you said, End League has good readership, has great readership, actually. The people who read it are extremely loyal to it. They pay attention. They've stuck around for as long as the issues have been coming out as consistently or as inconsistently as they have been, but they've stuck around. That's a great fan base, you know? But... I don't know if it's really 100% high on the radar. It's not secret. I don't know what it's called now. What is it called?
Secret Invasion and or yeah, Final Crisis.
There you go. Yeah. It's not that those huge, sweeping, overly hyped books. I think it would be great to, you know, it'd be great coverage-wise, media coverage-wise, hype-wise, that if I was involved in some of those, because it would get me so much coverage, mm-hmm. right? But if at the end of the day I'm not really happy with the project, what's the point of that? You know, it will be so evident in the pages that you see, because you will have Iron Man as a reference. You will have End League as a reference. You'll look at it and go, God, he was in love when he was doing these pages, when he was doing this book. And yet here he is on a very highly publicized title, highly publicized series, and there's nothing here. He's just not in love. And I guess at the point, it sounds so hokey, but I gotta be in love with the project that I'm working on. I love the End League. I love working with Rick and Joe. I love the Iron Man when I was working on that. Yeah. So
can you see that when you're looking at the pages after the fact, or is it when you're doing it?
It'll get juicy while I'm doing it. That mm-hmm. sounds disgusting.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah,
it makes
sense
that you work with Rick. That's
yeah. When I'm doing something, especially there's a scene that Rick was talking to me about, and I gave him a call back, and I said, you know what? I think it would be stronger if we made these changes, and we were laughing our asses off. And typically, I don't get that involved if I don't like something, if I'm just kind of going with the motions of it. But when I feel compelled to call Rick and say, you know how much cooler it would be if we changed these scenes to have this much, you know, fucked up imagery involved, and he in turn vibes off of that, that's how I know I'm really involved in the book. Yeah. So yeah, I can look back on Iron Man and recall, like, oh yeah, I was looking forward to this one specific panel. You know what I mean?
That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's cool, because so you want to work on good books rather than big books.
Yeah,
you'll never make it.
Yeah, right. I've just set myself up for failure there. You know, I really hope one day I get to work on a good big book. How mm-hmm. about that? That's the safest answer that I can say, because I don't know what good big books are going to come across my radar. That's also kind of, you know, it's kind of
well,
asshole,
you know,
thing.
A book becomes big when you make it good, I guess.
I'm hoping.
That's sort of the thought.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, well, that's about all I got for you. And you don't have anything new coming up.
Well, what are you paying attention to nowadays? What's out there that's really, really good?
Oh, good Lord, man. On the spot.
Well, give me your top, I don't know, top three. Top three is easy, right?
Top three. I think that some of the best work being done, the things that really excite me right now, have been, I think, Kirkman on Invincible, as far as doing a straight-up superhero book.
Yeah, yeah.
He's on 54 now. With Ryan Ottley, and I think Ryan Ottley is is going to be, like if he ever decides to leave Invincible, which he may never, it could be gigantic. It could be huge. Sure. And it's just everything that was fun about reading Spider-Man in the 60s, but done modern now. Just all drama and comedy. And it's just a great superhero book. That's all it is. And there's actually not enough of those. They're not enough fun. I think one of the books that's totally excited me in the past year is Proof from Image.
Okay.
Different style. You got a book where it's like the X-Files, but if Mulder was a Bigfoot. Now, when I hear that, I hear the high concept pitch. I don't like it. Like, I'm like, whatever. But to read it, it's so well planned out and executed, and the art by, what's his name, Riley Rossmo. It's sort of this sketchy, sort of not messy, but it kind of looks that way. It's just this tingling, you know, excited with life. That's been a book that I've been really happy to find this year. You know, and just in the super mainstream sort of things, I think that Jeff Johns, his work on almost everything he's doing at DC right now is like showing us the best of what you can do with mainstream superhero comics.
Oh, is that
just
right?
Stick like the Green Lantern. I'm reading a Superman book now for the first time ever. Jeff Johns on Action, James Robinson on Superman. You know, those books haven't been good in decades. You know, and they're just good now. They're way fun. So those are the kinds of things that I'm digging. There's lots. I mean, it's fun.
Right on. I'm not taking up your time, man. I hope you're not. Let me ask you, in as far as Invincible is concerned, what is that book doing? What chord is that book hitting with you? That, let's say, a fair percentage, 75-80% of the books out there are just missing out on. Why does that book hit you so well that, you know, I guess when you guys make a point to pick up a lot of books every week, I'm guessing, and some of them you're just kind of like, not really for me, or gosh, that's such a misstep, or that's just a miscue by way of that book. What is Invincible doing?
Well, one thing, you know, for me, you were actually talking about this with your work. There is some books that have the love on the page. And like, you can, for whatever reason, and I didn't mention Fear Agent, which, by the way, is literally easily one of my favorite books, but that's Rick's. We were already talking about him, and he's gotten lots of love from us. I mean, I absolutely, and that actually would be almost the same thing as Invincible for me. Mm-hmm. Those guys love doing the book. You can tell. I don't know, it's intangible. As far as superhero books goes, when you look at Invincible, it doesn't have anything holding it down. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like when you do a book in Marvel or in DC, with the exception of, say, the kinds of books that you and Joe did, that Iron Man, which isn't really tied down to a specific continuity because it's not necessarily current. There's so many things that can pull on in either direction that make it have to exist in that world, and that kind of drags it down. Whereas in Invincible, he's got his own world. He can do whatever he wants. So you've got that enthusiasm and that excitement for making it, and just, you know, with Invincible and with Fear Agent, like, the goal of the writer right there is to make you really like the main character and then stick it to them real bad.
Sure.
And over again. So it's kind of heart-wrenching, and just like they make you laugh a little bit, and then they drag you back down, and it's, you know, that kind of thing works really well for me.
But what do you call it? You mentioned Superman with Jeff Johns, James Robinson writing, right? Now, what are those guys getting away with that's making you like it again? You know, because if what you said is true, then those guys are handcuffed because they are working on a franchise book. You know, they are working on a big label book.
Yeah, well, there are certain people who have a preternatural talent to work within those confines and do it really, really well. Jeff Johns is... I mean, like it's his talent in life to be able to dance between those raindrops
and take
things that did not make sense before, or just distill them down to their essence, and all of it. And he retells the story of the origin of Green Lantern, and have it not feel old, and have it not feel shoehorned. And I don't know what that is. And then, you know, him and James Robinson, because in a way he's sort of a protege of James Robinson.
Sure. Okay. Okay.
And those two guys have this weird reverence for history. In comics.
But they don't make you feel old, you say.
They don't make you feel old, and they don't make you feel like you had to have known all of that beforehand.
Okay.
There's certain comics that they drop you hints, and they wink at you, and they say, this refers to a story that was done in Tales of Asgard in 1967. And nobody has any right to know that stuff. Like, if you you've spent too much time on it.
Yeah.
Whereas with that stuff, you know, like, it just... it all feels like it's part of a whole. And so it's reverent of the past, but aware that there's people who don't know that stuff. Which was, the best thing that James Robinson did was Starman, which had a lot of that in it.
Absolutely.
Starman made me really like the Golden Age characters that I had never, ever cared about or would have wanted to read about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is that he's able to do that. It's the same thing that Geoff Johns does on Justice Society of America. You know, on the surface, again, you read me the description of that book, and I don't care. I really don't.
Sure, sure. Yeah, but it reads like a dream, is what you're saying. You look at it conceptually, and you think, not for me. But once you start reading it, he's got something in his writing that makes you go, "Wow, that's great."
Yeah,
that works.
You're an artist. I don't mean to belie the art. I think on Invincible and Fury Agent specifically, that's the art on both of those books really excites me. On the Superman books, it's less of an impact. I guess the art is good. The art is passable. I don't have any problems with the art, but that's not what excites me about those. Because I think in those stories, the storytelling is really important. But when they both work in concert, that takes it up to another level.
Oh, sure. Now, let me ask you. You've mentioned two books that Geoff Johns is working on, right? You said Action. Is that what you said?
Yeah, Action Comics.
Action, and he's also doing which other ones right
he's
now?
He's doing Green Lantern, Justice Society, and I think something else I'm not reading.
How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the idea that there's one guy monopolizing, and that sounds really, really bad, but I don't mean it that way, but one guy working on three books, four books sometimes. What did I just pick up recently that's getting a lot of... the Secret Invasion stuff, right? Who's writing that? Is it...
Bendis.
Is it Bendis? Yeah. Bendis has his fingers in every Marvel pie that they ever bake every month, right? It seems like to me. Am I off on that?
I think that the Marvel ship follows him.
Okay. Now, how do you feel about that? I mean, does the guy have enough of a voice? Does the guy have enough of a... I'm just not talking about Bendis in specific.
Sure.
I'm talking about writers who have six or seven books under their wing every month. Do you think they have that much of a diverse voice that they can tell this story and that story and not have it feel like they're just kind of regurgitating from one book to the next?
Some do. I mean,
okay.
I think it's something you can't keep up indefinitely.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that all of those books by Geoff Johns are of a tone. I think, but they're not necessarily, I don't feel like they're bleeding into one another, taking away from one another. They feel like separate things. I think that there are times that at the Marvel, like you look at Bendis, and I think that there's times where he's been experimental and it hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm.
Like where he's got things that he does that work really well and he does other things, but they work for some people, not necessarily for me.
Give me an example. What are you talking about specifically? There's something that you can point to and say, this book worked in the style that he was trying to go for, and yet when he got experimental with this book, it didn't really work.
Very recently, he did, he was, this all led up to Secret Invasion, but he was doing New Avengers and he was doing Mighty Avengers.
Okay.
Which you would think, why would the man write two Avengers books? And they were actually wildly different. I liked the New Avengers. I didn't really like Mighty Avengers.
Really?
I don't know why. But he was taking them both from different tones. I mean, talking about Rick Remender, there's another guy who does... Like, literally, you couldn't tell the same guy was doing his different books.
Absolutely.
I couldn't tell you the same guy was doing N-League, who was doing Fury Agent, who was doing XXX Zombies, who was doing Booster Gold, for God's sakes.
Sure, but does that have something to do with the fact that the subject matter that he's doing, it's so diverse, not necessarily capes and tights, you know what I mean? That's the part that I kind of think that line gets so blurred as far as the kind of story that you're trying to tell, because how big of a jump is it, story-wise, story idea-wise, if you're trying to tell, the different adjective of Avengers, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not too far of a leap to say, Spider-Woman is that much closer, is closer to, Captain America, who's in two different teams or whatever it is, than to say, the Fear Agent character is so, and the stories that you can tell with him are just so different from the stories that you could tell with the End League or with, whatever book that Rick is working on.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it only works if you take if you look under that mask, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, if you are telling a story about Clark Kent, who's a very different person than Hal Jordan, and the way that one is cops in space, big epic, one is man from another world trying to live among different people and cope with the fact that he's got all these powers.
Sure.
It's the approach, if you think you break them down as characters, they're different characters, they have different stories to be told. And what's interesting is the guys who can do different different tones, you know, different kinds of stories, you know, like.
Oh, sure, sure.
You know, like some guys, you know, Ed Brubaker is a guy who's writing I love, but it's all, he writes in a certain way for the most part.
Okay.
You know, his Captain America feels procedural in the same way that Criminal does. They're all great and they're different, but like, you know, but they feel like Ed Brubaker books, you know, which isn't bad. It's just, you know, you kind of tell. Rick, I'm trying to think of another guy, but he's my best example right now. Rick Remender is totally a guy, like, his books all feel different, which is really interesting. Bendis can do that too, to an extent, except his dialogue is all sort of very similar.
Right, right. I think that's maybe what I'm getting caught up, and I'm not trying to pick on Bendis or anything, because I don't know enough of the man's work, but just based on, I remember picking up Powers a long, long, long time ago, and how balloon heavy it was, and that's become like an inside joke now, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, sort of.
Yeah, that's become a thing now, and I've seen that in a couple of his books, where I go, wow, this is just so extremely dialogue heavy, that sometimes it doesn't make sense to me. Or sometimes it starts to become, like, if you didn't have one artist on one set of books that he's doing versus another artist in a set of books, it almost reads as the same book to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I hope there's a little bit of truth to that that you can agree with, because sometimes. that's how it feels like to me. And again, this is just based on the opinions of a guy who doesn't go and buy books every week. And that's the reason why I'm kind of picking your brain about it, because I want to be able to talk to a guy who does have the info on it. You know?
I think the way that it works is if you like that style, you're okay with it.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact is, like, the reason that Bendis writes things like that is because he was raised on David Mamet and you know, the Homicide TV show and that quick pitter-pat dialogue and things like that. He puts that into everything he does. Mm-hmm. I really like that. I'm a fan of that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it works for me. That's a familiar feeling. It's like taking a guy who's a guitar player, but he's a really, really good guitar player. You know, every time Slash plays a guitar solo, it sounds like Slash.
Sure.
But it's so good. He's so good at that one thing that he does that it's kind of okay. Like, you could listen to it for a really long time, I guess.
Yeah, but do you put him on 6 different albums because he's so good?
They've tried.
All right.
The fact is, I think there's a lot of guys who can't do it, but there are certain ones who can.
Sure.
I think that, you know, DC's problem right now is that I don't think there are enough guys doing good work. I think Geoff Johns is sort of carrying the load for that whole thing. There's not a lot of other books there that are terribly exciting.
What are they doing with that? Oh, yes, I'm glad that you brought up Grant Morrison's name, because I just read all of that All-Star Superman, his entire All-Star Superman run, and that just blew me away. There is a book that I wish I had done, but I don't know if I could have done that as well as Frank Quietly did. That thing looks so great. I think that looks and reads so well. Concept-wise, everything that Grant wrote, I was like, damn, that is a great idea. That is a great, great idea.
But that has a different purpose, I suppose, than a lot of sort of the regular monthly books, because that is a book that exists on its own. Like, he just was allowed to go write his own story.
I
guess the good thing now is that you have the freedom creators do. You know, you can do a story that exists on its own. Like, I just want to go do this story, and it doesn't have to exist everything else. Where somebody else who's really good, I can go in and play amongst the world and try to keep up with it and keep those balls juggled, I guess. But no, you're absolutely right. I need to get I don't have the second set of the half of it because I bought the first collection.
Yeah, it's great, man. Yeah. It's amazing. I wish I had drawn it. I really, really wish I had drawn it. There's very few books that are out where I go, wow, that's something I wish I was on the ground up on. And that was one where after I put it down, I'm like, fuck, this book exists. And I didn't get a chance to draw on it at all. That's my ego talking. You know what I mean? Like, damn it, I wish I was part of that. Because that was such a great book. Or it did something for me enough that I really, really wanted to become a part of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. I guess that doesn't happen that often.
No, it's few and far between. But that's only because I don't make an active effort to buy enough books. I bought that book based on, I wrote something on my blog, but I wanted to read up on new stuff that's out, and a lot of people chimed in, left comments, and said, yeah, try this, and I tried everything. I tried a lot of the suggestions they have, but my one deciding factor was that I needed to have it in a good chunk, which was, in trade paperback form, if I was lucky enough, the local comic book store that I go to here collected it all in one giant plastic bag, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the only mandate that I put to myself. I don't want to buy single issues because it just feels like an incomplete meal to me these days. You know, like, how great is something just based on got the one issue, because I don't think that's just enough room for a comic book to breathe, really. You know, unless it's set up to be just the one issue. So I told myself, buy the trade paperback, see if it feels right, and based on that, just fall in love with comics all over again, because I think I need to start doing that again. I need to start falling in love with comics again, based on the stuff that's out there.
You know, based on all that, there's so much. I feel like there's more diversity and more good stuff out there than everywhere. It's harder to find it because there's so much of it, and so much focus is on, you know. You know, it's kind of I feel vaguely lame sometimes for saying, well, go check out, you know, Action Comics. Everybody's checking out Action Comics. It's not like it's a big secret, but the fact that it's good is actually, it's notable. So, but at the same time, you know, I get so excited about Fear Agent and Proof and, you know, whatever Vertigo book is coming out.
Yeah, I'm going to get that Fear Agent. I've heard of that Remender guy here. Yeah. He's pretty good.
Have you not read Fear Agent? Don't tell me.
I have not.
That's just fun in a bottle. That's just good stuff.
Yeah, everyone talks it up and I'm all, frick, come on, get serious, you know? Again, my recent, if you look at the shelf that I have here in my studio, as far as the stuff that trade paperback wise, it's so dated. It's the stuff that I fell in love with back in the day that I still think, I believe in my heart of hearts, that would still be relevant story wise now. And yeah, I just need to update. I need to have new stuff coming in here, because just at some point it'll just start becoming ancestral, you know. I'll just start looking at the same stuff over and over again and be impressed by that, when there could be just as something good around the corner that I have not been exposed to. You're talking Fear Agent up a lot, so I'm going to go pick that up as soon as I can.
Yeah, well, I also know of this video show that they do about comic books.
Oh, seriously?
Almost 100 episodes of it, called iFanboy. And every week they usually talk about some books.
Oh, there you go. So now, I will make a point to check in every week, friend.
There's also a back catalog of about 2 years.
I'm going to check it out. Actually, I already have, actually.
Let's see, you really liked All-Star Superman. Have you ever read Grant Morrison's Animal Man?
No, what I read of Grant Morrison's is, and correct me if I'm wrong, did he do The Invisibles?
Yes.
Yeah, I read Invisibles way back in the day. I read the Invisibles. If you were to ask me specific storyline points, that would be just tragic, because I couldn't bring it out to you. But I just remember Invisibles going way over my head.
Same thing. I stopped reading it. The thing about Grant Morrison is he's a guy who swings for the fences.
Okay.
A lot of the times that he connects, and all of it, he does something transcendent. All-Star Superman is one of those examples. A lot of the times he does something that's completely wacky that some people really like and a lot of people have a hard time getting into. That's what he's doing on Batman right now, which is kind of weird. But good. You can see that it's good or whatever.
Who's he doing Batman with? Who's
drawing? J.H. Williams III did it for a little while. He did parts of it. And now the end of it is being drawn by Tony Daniel, I think.
Okay.
And that's okay. I don't necessarily recommend it because it's kind of heavy, but it's also not over yet, so you can't tell how it's going to end. Animal Man, which looks like a book from the late 80s, is because it is, but he's killing. I mean, just like, there's three trades, it's amazing. If you liked All-Star Superman,
really?
Check that out. Also, there's a little three-issue series that he did with Frank Quitely called We Three.
Oh yeah, I picked that up. That's correct. That is so insanely good.
It's insanely good. The stuff that Quitely did with panels and the fast-moving animals and the stuff.
Yeah, that is just so well done, shot for shot. And not only that, it's just not fancy panel layout, but it's just so, it just feels so intuitive. It feels like you're reading it as it's coming out of Grant's mouth. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I would picture it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, yeah. You know, it makes you feel. At the end, you're sad.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Those animals into people. So that's great. Absolutely. Collaborative work. So try Animal Man. I'll leave you with that one.
Okay. All right.
That goes back. That's prime Grant Morrison.
Okay. And that stuff's still being released today, I'm going to guess, right? I mean, it's out on the shelf somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I bought them within the last couple of years, so I think they're all still out.
Okay. Good stuff. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Let me say goodbye and say thanks, and hopefully we'll see you around.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Josh. Thank you for having me.
Wow, that's the first time that I have ever been interviewed halfway through an interview. Anyway, I want to thank Eric for his time. That was a ton of fun. And you can get over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show or listen to one of the Pick of the Week podcasts or watch one of the video shows or read any of the great content we've got there, or just to pull your comics. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you later. We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.